Well, now, we have done our overview of investments and risk versus return, and these lay the foundation for everything that will go forward as we delve into the more important and long-term oriented investments. But we need to spend a little time, just a tiny bit, on short-term investments. They're not that sophisticated. They're not that difficult to understand, but they're very important when we need our money in the short term. And we're going to do our best to avoid we'll discuss a little bit. Actually, we're going to go into it in depth because it's here, it's now, and it's important. Politics. Poly means many, and ticks are blood-sucking insects. Right. So let's get started on slide 55 with short-term investments. To review, short-term investments are investments that are designed for you when you need your money within 6 months, a year, maybe 2 or 3 years, depending on how important it is that you don't lose the money. They're often referred to simply as cash. Do you have your money in the markets and the stocks? No, it's all in cash, which means it's in some type of short-term investment, which is guaranteed or pretty darn close. Sometimes it's not explicitly guaranteed, but it's, you might as well be. They're very liquid, which is a fancy way of saying that you can get your money out immediately. There is a very low risk of losing principal, hence, as we learned in our previous session, we ain't going to get much money from them because of that implicit or explicit guarantee. So, low risk, low return. Oh well. And for many years since the Great Recession, they were paying close to zero. Some were paying zero. But finally, we're starting to see the rise toward the norm of 2, 3, 4%, maybe even 5%. And herein is where the politics will enter our discussion. Another thing that we'd like to say when we talk about short-term investments is that it is a place to park your money. Yeah, you don't want to lose this money, so this is for a down payment on a house or for your college tuition or for a car or whatever. So you don't want it to go from $10,000 down to $8,000 in a matter of a week or a month or even a day. And we also often use this for the emergency fund, which we'll just briefly touch on that we discussed the emergency fund more in detail in the Business 121 Financial Planning and Money Management class. So let's now take a look at the way we earn interest on short-term investments. There are two major ways in which we earn interest. On slide 56, there's the stated rate of interest, which is the one that we are used to. You put your money in a savings account and you're getting 2%. So if you put $100 in after 1 year, principal times rate times time, you'll have $102. But in many of these short-term investments, especially when you move into the more sophisticated ones that are normally not for us retail investors, there's the discount basis, which is a little tricky, but not really that tricky. It's a method of earning interest on a security by purchasing it at a price below its redemption value. And hence, the difference is the interest earned. The interest accrues. You like that word, accrues? Not a sailing cruise, but accrue. A-C-C-R-U-E. S on the investment. So this is how treasury bills and corporate paper and bankers' acceptance notes work. So and we'll discuss these in detail as we go along. What was an example? So let's say you purchase a security now for $4,800 that will be redeemed for $5,000 in 9 months. Your interest would be $200. And along the way, assuming it's liquid as short-term investment, which most of the more sophisticated are, you could turn around and sell. You don't have to wait until it matures and you get to $5,000. You can turn around and sell to somebody else. And it will be increasing in value as you get closer and closer to the maturity date. Make sense? Yeah, it does make sense. But it's just not something we're used to. Slide 57. What are the risks of short-term investments? Now, wait a minute, Piano. You told me that these are low-risk investments. And the answer is they are. With regard to default, with regard to a capital loss, you're not going to lose your money. You are either guaranteed or pretty darn close. I mean, you might as well be guaranteed. Now, are there any other risks? Oh, yes. Remember, nothing is risk-free. In this case, you have a risk of losing purchasing power because short-term investments barely keep up with inflation. And we hope to show you this in detail as we move through the semester, especially the risk of lost opportunity costs. Because unless your time horizon is very short, there are several investment alternatives, almost all of which will give you a better rate of return, assuming the world doesn't end. And if the world ends, then it doesn't matter where your money is. I have my money in the bank. Great. If the entire system collapses and cracks and dissolves into a pool of tears and there's no food at the grocery stores, no gas at the gas station, no clothes at the mall, the cell phones aren't working, the trash isn't being picked up. You think your money in the bank is going to be worth anything? Besides, there's going to be an armed guard in front of the bank not letting anybody get in. So failure is not an option. We're all in this together. So yes, remember, the risk of default is low. It's in fact, infinitesimal. I didn't say that correctly. But the risk of losing purchasing power, high. Risk of lost opportunity cost, high. Yes. And we hope, I know some of you are a little still wary about stocks, and you should be, and don't really understand bonds. But if you have a long-term time horizon, 3, 5, 10, 20 years, you're better off somewhere else, in my humble opinion. And we hope to convince you of that over the course of this class. Slide 58. Oh, I'm sorry. Repeat after me. There is no such thing as a risk-free investment. As a risk-free investment. That's the class participation part in the face-to-face class. Slide 58. Let's take a now look at some of the short-term investment types. Deposit accounts, passbook savings accounts, well, they're usually just called savings accounts at a bank. Share accounts at credit unions, they're not called share accounts. Everybody calls them savings accounts. And it used to be, and I think some companies still offer these little passbooks that look like a passport, right? And especially great for kids because the kids come in and they stamp it and make it look very official. Checking accounts that pay interest are actually called NOW accounts, negotiable order of withdrawal. I don't know where they got that name from. And then at a bank, you can also get a money market deposit account, which is different from the money market mutual funds that we'll look at later on, but they have the same name, so people lump them together. Deposit accounts are offered by banks and credit unions. They are often called demand accounts since the funds are available upon the demand. They provide the highest level of liquidity and are usually guaranteed up to $250,000 by the government or some governmental agency. Now, does that mean you can walk into your bank and say, I'd like to take out my $70,000 in cash today? They'll look at you and say, some branches might have that much money, but most don't have that much cash sitting around in the bank. And they'll go, can you come back tomorrow? And they're allowed to do that. They're allowed to say, oh, we need to, you need to give us a day. We got to schedule this if you really want it in cash. They'll try to get you to take a cashier's check. And then they'll call the FBI because this is a suspicious transaction. It's part of the Patriot Act. Yeah, and the FBI will say, why the... Well, they won't tell you. They're not allowed to tell you that they had to call the FBI for a suspicious transaction. But they'll take a look at you and try to wonder why you're taking it all out in cash. And the next day when you show up, they should have the money there for you. But don't do it, folks. Don't do it. This is what some people did this in the during the Great Recession when several of the banks failed. It's very stupid. Very, very, very stupid. What are you going to do with your cash? We're going to hide it, right? There's in the Business 121 class, we have a few links to people who did really stupid things with their money in cash, such as burying it and then the worms eating it. Slide 59. Savings bonds. Now, you know, these things are cute, folks. They're popular gifts for newborns. You might even have one sitting in a drawer somewhere that you didn't even know existed. But they're not that useful, in my humble opinion. But they do make a popular gift for newborns. They use the discount method of payment, the accrual type of security. So your grandparents bought a savings bond for you when you were born for $50, and now maybe you're in the college-bearing years, the college-bearing? college-going years, 18 to 22. You go find that savings bond, and you'll find that it's worth maybe, you know, maybe not $50. But because they haven't been paying it'll be about 3% or so. So now here's the cool part. If you have any of these sitting in your drawer somewhere, go get them now and use them to pay for the tuition at Southwestern, right? Because if you do that, not only do you not have to pay state and local income taxes, why? Because the feds can't tax the states can't tax the feds, but also the federal government will waive the interest if you use it for higher education. So go see if you can find them sitting in the drawer somewhere. All right? Is that a deal? Yeah. Also, the other series, HH, are being phased out. You can't buy those anymore. They pay interest as opposed to the accrual method. Now, the ones that have been become somewhat popular for people who are frightened by inflation are the Series I. They are inflation indexed. And there are bonds that we'll discuss later on in the course that are also inflation indexed. These became very popular after the Great Recession when the interest rates went basically to zero because many people believed that, oh my, the Federal Reserve is going to create tremendous inflation, so I better protect myself. They don't pay very much interest. In fact, they pay much less than the others, but they are guaranteed to outpace inflation, so they are indexed to inflation. So, again, if you're worried about inflation, you would want to take a look at these. But if you have a longer-term time frame, the bonds, I think, in my humble opinion, are a better deal, the inflation-index bonds that we'll discuss later on in the semester. So, are we really excited about savings bonds? No. But hey, some people like the fact that they are guaranteed by the full faith and credit of the United States government. Yes, they are. Slide 61, Treasury bills. Now, once you leave the good feelings of the savings bills, the savings bonds, these Treasury bills are, I think, a better deal, in my humble opinion. In fact, we're going to ask you to, in your assignment, we're going to ask you to research this TreasuryDirect.gov website where you, dear students, as lucky members of the great American economic machine, can purchase Treasury bills at the same prices that the big boys and girls on Wall Street get. They are sold at a discount, so they use the accrual method, and you redeem them at their face value. They vary in 1, 3, 6 month maturities. They often use week. They'll say 4 week, 13 week, 26 week, or days, but they're 1, 3, and 6 month maturities. And these are generally regarded as the safest of all investments. In fact, when we ask what is the risk-free rate of return, what we often do is take a look at the three-month Treasury bill return. So they are used as the benchmark, as the standard for all other investments, comparing your potential return to what we can get from Treasury bills. Again, the states can't tax the feds can't tax the states, so Treasury bills are free from state and local income tax. And you can purchase them directly from the Treasury at treasurydirect.gov. That's actually a pretty cool website, and it's, as I said, the topic of one of your assignments. So you're going to research that website. You know, when the feds do something good, we want to say nice things about them because we like to say horrible things when the government screws up. Slide 62, CDs, Certificates of Deposits. Now, these are fancy savings accounts, really, folks. They're sometimes called time-specific, right? Because you have to leave these on deposit for a specified period of time. 7 days, 6 months, 2 to 5 years. What happens if you need your money before then? You got it. They're going to penalize you. And because they're issued by banks and credit unions, they have that same $250,000 per investor, per bank, guarantee from the federal government. Now, you may see CDs that are paying higher interest rates than if you were to go to your bank or credit union. And these are called brokered CDs. They're sold by brokerage firms. In other words, a stockbroker could offer you CDs that are paying higher interest. And you can turn around and sell them back through your broker to somebody else. Now why would the broker be pushing these CDs at a higher interest rate? Well, the bank or credit union that is behind the CD needs cash. and they're not getting enough of it from their depositors, from their clients. So they're going out to the brokerage world and saying, hey, we need some cash. Would you sell these for us? And so, of course, they have to offer a better rate of return. Now, if this bank or credit union goes under, are you going to lose your money? No, it's still guaranteed by the full faith and credit of the governmental agency that is backing the bank or the credit union. But there's just a higher percentage probability that you're going to get a friendly letter in the mail saying, we are the regulators who have taken your bank into receivership. Don't worry, you'll get all your money back. It's just going to take a little while. Yeah, so that's why they pay more, right? More risk, more return. Now, you have to be careful with CDs because they will usually roll over automatically if you do not redeem them. So say you have a six-month CD. There's a 2-hour window on the second Tuesday of the month where you have to run into the bank and tell them that you... No, I'm teasing. They usually give you 2 weeks. And if you don't tell them what to do, they're going to roll it over into another six-month CD. So that is why you can specify ahead of time that you want the proceeds automatically rolled into your checking account or your savings account. So make sure you... If you're a CD... kind of guy or gal, you want to make sure that unless you do want it to roll over, that you want it to be automatically sent to your checking account. Now, coincidentally, there is an interview that you'll find in Canvas or on the college class website with a good friend of my wife and mine, and she is a dyed-in-the-wool CD investor. She searches for good CD rates, and she loves CDs. She loves that protection. So listen to that interview with Jean. She's a character. Slide 63. Now, commercial paper. What a silly name, commercial paper. Well, these are basically IOUs, short-term unsecured. What does that mean? There's It is backed by the full faith and credit of the company that is issuing them. But these corporations have very high credit standings. These are not companies that maybe you've never heard of them, some of them, because they may not do business with the general public. But these are companies that are very liquid, shall we say. They have their balance sheets, if you're an accounting major or taking accounting, are very strong, which means they've got a lot of assets. And so they need some money. They need this for the first 90 days or 180 days or 270 days. And they say, hey, you know, we're Walmart or we're IBM. We need to borrow $180 million. Will you lend it to us? This is how much we'll pay. And the investment community looks around and says, yeah, sure, we'll do that. Now, why do they keep them less than 1 year? Well, by keeping the maturity less than 1 year, these do not need to be registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. And what does that mean? Well, there's a whole registration process when it comes to stocks and bonds that is, you know, quite lengthy and expensive. And only you'd want to do this if you needed the money for 30 years or 10 years. Then you would say, okay, it's worth the pain, vale la pena, to actually go through the registration process. By keeping it less than a year, you don't have to do that. So that's why it's often called paper, I guess, as a way to give it a little bit of a less weighty description than a bond, which is more like 10 or 20 or 30 years. Now, here's the kicker. Are you and I going to buy commercial paper? Well, not really. Why is that? Because it's sold in multiples of $100,000, and they don't want you to just buy one. So who's buying these things? Well, they're purchased by institutional investors, money market mutual funds, pension funds, individual investors who have a lot of money, right? So we're going to ask you to find... it's a bonus question because it's kind of not easy to do. To find an example of commercial paper and what it's paying, and you're going to find that it's not easy to do because it's not regularly reported as much of the other types of investments that we deal with are. So if you walk into a brokerage firm and say, you know, I'd like to know, excuse me. If you have any commercial paper examples I can look at, their eyes are going to get really big and they're going to think, wow, this person must have millions of dollars to invest. And they're going to say, oh, have a seat, please. And then when they realize that they find out that you're doing it for a community college class, they're going to say, get out of here. So if you are so inclined to do the research, go right ahead. But again, it isn't going to be easy because for the most part, we... retail investors, small investors, don't normally partake of commercial paper. Nor do we invest in their cousins, the banker's acceptance notes, slide 64. Now, these are very similar to corporate paper, but these are notes that are tied to a bank. And why is that? Because banks are... banks. When you grow up, you want to be a bank, and they are the bedrock of our financial system. And so, if you're a company that typically deals with large amounts of money, but you're not a very big company, right? You're a small company. You don't really have the ability to issue corporate paper. So you go to your major bank and you say, "Look, we need $90 million." Over the next 90 days or 180 days, right? 90 days. We're going to do a big transaction. The bank will say, okay, they'll look at their balance sheet, they'll look at their income statement, they'll look at the numbers and see, yes, this is, or they might have an ongoing relationship with this company. And they'll say, okay, we will lend you the money and we will put our name on the corporate paper, but they're not corporate paper, they're banker's acceptance notes. And then you will pay us back the money. Make sense? Excuse me. So, Wells Fargo or J.P. Morgan will issue these on behalf of the company that's doing the business transaction. They're often international transactions. And so, to you and me, it looks like a corporate paper, but it's issued from a bank. So they're basically cousins. And again, usually the minimum is $100,000. Slide 64. Slide 65. Now, here's where finally we get to invest in corporate paper. Huh? Well, when we invest in a money market mutual fund, we're basically investing in a mutual fund that invests in treasury bills and corporate paper and bankers' acceptance notes. These money market mutual funds are mutual funds that pool the capital of a large number of investors and use it to invest exclusively in short-term securities. So, in other words, we don't want to lose the money. We don't want to put it in the stock market. We can lose money in bonds or real estate. We need this money safe. But we don't really have a whole lot of money to invest in corporate paper. So we buy a money market mutual fund, and they do it for us. Why? Because they have millions of investors, or thousands or whatever, sending billions of dollars to them, and they can buy the large denominations. All brokerage firms, mutual fund companies offer them virtually. And here's the difference between a money market account at a bank or a credit union and a money market mutual fund. The money market mutual funds are not guaranteed by the full faith and credit of a governmental agency, whereas the money market deposit account at a bank or a credit union is. But, so you might say, well, I don't want to deal with them. I'd rather go to the bank. No. They are still considered virtually risk-free. If there ever is a default, which is so rare, other companies step in and bail out the investors. They don't want anyone to think that their money market mutual funds are not safe. The other companies, the regulators say, Domini, they okay it, right? Because when there is it's not even actually a default, they lose a penny. That's exactly what happens, folks. It's called breaking the buck. Look it up if you're so inclined, if you really want to learn about how the machinations are going on behind the scenes. And it happens so rarely. The last time it happened was, of course, in 2008 during the Great Recession. One company had two mutual funds. One lost a penny. The other one, I think, lost three pennies, which is unheard of. They did really stupid things tied to a company called Lehman Brothers. It wasn't Lehman Brothers went bankrupt, but it was a money market mutual fund that invested heavily in short-term corporate paper from Lehman Brothers. And they had egg on their face, and they were so sorry, and the world stood up and said, what? Because now what about my money market mutual fund? And the last thing we need are people pulling out I think it's about $3.5 trillion that are in money market mutual funds. So none other than the Federal Reserve Bank, and we'll come back to the Federal Reserve Bank in a bit, came to the rescue. The White Knight, and said, relax, we will backstop all money market mutual funds through brokerage firms, through mutual funds, for the next 6 months. And then they did it again after 6 months, and then after a year. In late 2009, people were still scared, but not as terrified. They weren't going to the bank and asking them to take out their $70,000 in cash. Most all have check writing privileges and the ability to transfer to and from your checking account at your bank. So they're very convenient. And they give pretty decent rates of return, depending, of course, what the short-term risk-free rate of default is. Slide 66. So which short-term investment is for me? Well, as we said, commercial paper, bankers' acceptance notes are usually only suitable for institutional investors. Savings bonds, make cute gifts for newborns. Many investors, though, are able to purchase treasury bills directly from the treasury because those are in $1,000 denominations or $5 or $10. So they're not $100,000. So you might decide that you're willing to buy your treasury bills directly from the treasury. That is indeed if you need treasury bills. And CDs are okay. You know, I'm not a big fan of CDs myself, but they're okay for those who are sure they're not going to need the money until maturity, right? You know you're not going to need this money for 6 months, then fine. Money market mutual funds, money market deposit accounts, I think are the preferred choice by most investors. That's what I use, but that doesn't mean I'm any better than anybody else. Especially because they're just so convenient. Every bank, every credit union, brokerage firm, mutual fund company offers them, and they are very convenient in that you could transfer the money to and from your savings and checking account electronically. But then you have people who are proud to say that they have $500,000 sitting in a savings account in a bank, and they haven't taken this course yet, and they haven't learned about suitable long-term investments that don't involve a bank, that in just assuming the world doesn't end, they'll do a whole lot better. But the bank manager is licking her chops, thanking them profusely for leaving their money in a savings account, paying 1% or what, more or less, or maybe a little bit more. Actually, they're going up. And then turning around lending it back to them at 18% on their credit card. I told you, when you grow up, you want to be a bank. So, slide 67, the emergency fund debate. Well, you know, I have a hard time with this thing. Personally, should you have an emergency fund? Well, many financial experts recommend that households create an emergency fund of 3, 6, or even 9 months of income. I don't agree. As long as you have access to cash, right? Credit line of credit, home equity line of credit, there is no good reason to keep $50,000 or more in a savings account earning point. Well, they've gone up, maybe 1% now. You see, actually, some over 2%, but they're a little unusual. Usually, they're the internet-based companies. But you're going to do that. It's part of your assignment is to go look at what the savings accounts are paying. Some are still paying 0.1%, but most are paying more now. Instead, I would use the money to pay down your credit card debt if you have that. Now, there are some caveats here, right? You're adequately insured. Make sure you have good insurance, especially health insurance, because that's where a week in the hospital can kill you financially. And you're not one of these people such as salespeople, self-employed, or business owners, or people who get laid off often. Those people, oh yeah, they definitely need a huge emergency fund. You're a mortgage broker and you're making money hand over fist because houses are selling, or you're a real estate broker, and then all of a sudden, you know, there's a recession and you need to make it through the hard times. These are people, sometimes they'll say, my company, my business, my employment is feast or famine. I'm either making a lot of money or I'm making nothing. And so those people, yes, they need an emergency fund. But I'm not saying you should keep $17.87 in your savings account, your checking account. I'm not saying that either. You definitely want to. That's why you take Business 121, Financial Planning and Money Management, and create your cash flow statement. Okay, I digress. But this is where we put our emergency fund money, in a money market mutual fund, in a CD savings account. Slide 68. Okay, so here in the face-to-face class is when we do our checking for comprehension. And so we have these little A, B, C, D cards that people throw up in the air. Of course, at the major universities, they have little buttons at the desk they push and it comes up on the screen. What's a mutual fund that pools the capital of a large number of investors and uses it to invest exclusively in short-term securities? Mutual fund that pools the capital of a large number of investors and uses it to invest in short-term securities. Commercial paper, money market mutual funds, the passbook, the savings accounts, or CDs. Right. It's the money market mutual fund. And usually you don't hear people say money market mutual fund. They just say money market. Money market mutual funds and their counterparts at banks and credit unions have rates that are usually close to CDs. Yeah, not quite a CD because it's not guaranteed to stay there for 6 months or two years or whatever. But you don't get the early withdrawal penalty, so that's cool. All right. What is a saving instrument in which funds must remain on deposit for a specified period? There is normally a penalty for early withdrawal. Right, that's, we just discussed it. That's the CD. CDs are cool if interest rates are going down because you can lock in the good rate, right? That's cool. If interest rates are going up, well, then you're kind of stuck. Often, what a bank or a credit union will do is they'll give you what they call their savings bump. I like that name, bump. So you bought a CD for 3 years and now interest rates go up, they'll give you one chance to bump up your interest rate. I think that's kind of cute, right? But again, you hope you don't need the money until the CD matures. Otherwise, they're going to slap your wrist when you take it out. What are short-term unsecured promissory notes, IOUs, that are issued by corporations with very high credit standing, normally sold in $100,000 denominations, commercial paper, money market mutual funds, passbook savings accounts, or CDs, certificates of deposits? Right, commercial paper. And their cousins, bankers' acceptance notes, are normally only purchased by institutional investors such as pension funds, life insurance companies, money market mutual funds, people with a lot of money to invest. But in some individual investors, and if you're one of them, are you taking this class? I think you're paying somebody to do this, right? Slide 71. And what is a guaranteed demand account at a bank or credit union that normally pays little interest but will be offered with a toaster or a waffle iron, which makes it all worthwhile? Right, this is a savings account. No comment. Remember, your bank loves you for keeping that money in the savings account. They just love you. Thank you so much. That's why they're always so nice when you walk in the door to you. Right. Now, slide 72. Now, I told you we're going to do our best to avoid the politics, but it's kind of hard right now since politics has taken center stage in the short-term investment world, because the question that often people don't ask is, who controls short-term rates? I mean, virtually all the investments we're going to take a look at are controlled by the marketplace, the supply and demand. And that's what you get if you teach a parrot to say supply and demand, supply and demand. What do you get? You get a learned economist. That's one of the finance jokes about it. Don't worry, they have plenty of jokes. The economists have plenty of jokes about us, too. So if you really want to learn the internals of all what's going on at the Fed and the economy, take an economics class, because I'm going to gloss over this very, very quickly, not get too far into the way it's done. But who sets short-term rates? Well, that's the job of the Federal Reserve Bank. Run by the Federal Reserve Board of Governors, just often referred to as the Fed. That's their job. They are the banker's bank. And when people scream and yell, get rid of the Fed, audit the Fed, I say, you know what? It ain't easy. What they're doing is not easy because they have two objectives. Full employment and keeping inflation in check. Now, again, I'm not going to go into all the details, but if you take economics, you will learn that those objectives are often at odds with one another. So you have this push-me-pull-you. Any doctor... what's the guy's name? I can't remember. The push-me-pull-you was an animal in the series of books about Dr. Doolittle. Right, Dr. Doolittle. So when people say, end the Fed, I say, okay, what are you going to do? What are you going to replace it with? Because somebody has to control the money supply. Somebody has to control short-term rates. And the Fed was designed to be independent and not subject to political pressures. Well, throughout its history, there have been presidents and others who have tried to exert political pressure on the Fed, but none more than the current situation. It's just outrageous, unheard of, unprecedented what is going on. And it's so incredibly ironic, because after the Great Recession, the Fed did what it was supposed to do. It did whatever it could to reflate the economy that had deflated, at least the housing sector, and had, of course, moved to other sectors of the economy with 10-point-whatever% unemployment. That's the official rate. It was actually, and the people who even do that will tell you it's higher than this, but it wasn't 25% like it was in the Great Depression. And much of the reason for that can be, I should say credit for that, can be laid at the feet of the Fed. Because what did they do? They lowered interest rates to zero, literally zero. And that's why people who had CDs and short-term securities, short-term investments, were just literally screwed. They were these retirees who were used to getting 5, 6, maybe even more percent on CDs back in the 1980s were now getting zero on their investments. And oh boy, were they upset. But their idea was to use the short-term reserves, interest rates, to restart or reflate, if you could say, you might want to say, the economy. Now, there were many people, one of them being Agent Orange, who were not happy about this. They were screaming and hollering that the Fed was going to ignite inflation at a time when wages, housing prices were falling, when we had deflation. Would you think inflation is bad? It is. Deflation is worse. That's what we had in the Great Depression. And all the economists, you know, the elites, people who actually went to school to learn about this and do their best. Now, yes, I know. There's a reason why economics is called the dismal science. But these people were saying, no, you don't understand. We need to reflate the economy. Inflation is not our problem. We have to worry about deflation. And, of course, it turns out they were right, right? We have not had inflation. Now, okay, you can't leave it at zero forever, right? So in 2015, the Fed started to raise interest rates slowly at first, and then as the economy appeared stronger and stronger and stronger, and 2017, December 2017, the global economy, folks, 31 of the largest 32 economies around the world were in growth mode. It doesn't get much better than that. And so the Fed's job is, as you might hear about this famous saying, the Fed's job is to take away the punch bowl at the party, because we don't want inflation to kick in and then have the opposite problem of deflation. And so as they started to do their increasing, our president started to scream and holler, because in the past, the Fed has gone too far in one direction and too far in the other direction. It's not an easy job. We don't want to get into the mechanics behind it, but it's not like just stepping on the gas of a car, stepping on the brakes of a car. It's like stepping on the gas of 2,500 cars that are traveling at different speeds and different directions, and then stepping on the brakes is the same way. And it takes months and months for the cars to... I often like to think of them as battleships or aircraft carriers, and there's not just one of them, there's several of them. So it's not an easy job, okay? I think I've impressed upon you. So if you look at this, there's a link here. If you look at this, you'll find that the same people who are now screaming and hollering at the Fed for raising their interest rates were screaming and hollering at the Fed a few years ago for keeping them so low, and saying that they were doing it to make the previous president, Obama, look good. I mean, Polly means many, and ticks are blood-sucking insects. So let's hope that the Fed stays independent, does the best job they can, and at the same time doesn't keep raising interest rates until they break something, because we certainly don't want a recession, but we also don't want inflation. So I think I belabored the point that the Fed's job is not easy, and the Federal Reserve chairman or chairwoman is often called the second most powerful person in the country because they control the money supply. The president controls the army and the military. And so let's hope that they do the best they can, realizing that they're not perfect. They're humans like everybody else. They make mistakes. And who knows? They might be able to engineer what is often called a soft landing, and we won't have a hard recession. But we'll see. We'll see. In the meantime, if you are so inclined, I recommend that you read whatever you can about short-term interest rates, the Fed, and maybe even take an economics class where you will go into far more detail about how this is all done. Slide 73. That is our discussion of short-term interest rates and the final presentation for Chapter 1, where we looked at the introduction to investments, an overview of the investment universe, risk versus return, risk versus return. You know, I can't emphasize enough, go back and look at that presentation, because that is such an awesome idea that it's so important when it comes to investing. And then get short-term interest rates investments out of the way. Because I hope you're excited, dear students, because if you are, that's a very good sign that you can be your own investment advisor, and there is a future for you. I think I've said it before, I'll say it again. There's a future for you in the industry. Because in our next chapter, so important, mutual funds. Why? Because there is a very great probability that whether or not you get involved in the investment world, you as an employee are going to have the opportunity to invest in some kind of employer-sponsored plan, such as a 401k, 403b. And the investment of choice in virtually all of these are mutual funds. Investments of choice are mutual funds. So this is important. And remember, you're going to be the investment guru for your friends and family and coworkers, and this is a serious responsibility that you must not abrogate. I like that word, abrogate. Look it up. Your friends and family and coworkers are going to depend on you. You can't let them down. See you in our next chapter on mutual funds.